Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper. I'm down at the National Wild Turkey Federation Annual Convention in Nashville, Tennessee. Run into a couple of old friends of mine from way back. These are turkey callers when turkey calling history first started, I think.
Absolutely.
Hey, got yep. Keith Wallig. I've already done one program with him. Billy, he's a little bit ahead of you. Got Billy Yargis. These two guys literally have decades in when it's turkey calling competitions, turkey hunting. And these guys could write the book if they wanted to.
We go back a few years, don't we, Billy? A little bit, yeah.
Well, neither one of you are old as me, and I always thought I was a turkey hunting nut, but you guys jumped in with both feet way back. And Keith, I talked to you a little bit yesterday about your calling history and all, and it's been a phenomenal road.
Absolutely, and I cannot believe where the time has went. You know, I got into it in the late 70s, or 79 or so, and took off from there.
You realize that's almost 50 years ago?
I'm telling you. You ain't telling me, buddy. I'll let Billy talk for a while. I'm too old. But, yeah. But has it come a long ways? Yes, absolutely. I never would have thought as this convention would it be as huge as it is now. And Billy can, you know, he can tell the same thing. I mean, but it's come from back then and the way it is now with the evolution of, you know, materials and calls and stuff. Unbelievable, you know, the difference between all that. And, you know, Billy, I mean, just remember where it was, you know, how hard it was to get material and you know.
Yeah, we had to learn to figure out where to get it at.
Absolutely. That was another problem.
Sure, it was a problem. Some guys didn't want to share that with you.
Oh, yeah, that was the deal, you know.
Excellent point. Remember, everything centered around turkey hunting was a big secret, you know. The old-timers that had figured it out. They weren't going to tell anybody.
Heck no. You know, and you know, it got to where you might want a gun or something like that. Then it went up to, you know, big money, cash, and stuff like that. I would have never thought. We would have been, you know, hundreds and thousands of dollars doing turkey calling.
No, I
would
know
you, it. Billy? I mean, old guns and, you know.
Nothing wrong with that. And the guys that made it in the turkey calling circuit, you know yourself, it didn't start out all that big, but it mushroomed in a hurry. Everybody wanted to be a champion turkey caller, you
absolutely,
know.
Absolutely.
I never had that desire so much. Billy, I was so bad.
Got into it to get better turkey calling.
Yeah, that's funny. Now, when did you get into turkey calling?
I started hunting in 77, and I got into my first calling contest in Ironton, Missouri back in 1996. I went for one that year, and then the next year, I got the bug of competing.
Yeah. Did you win that first one?
I got second in amateur.
Well, that's pretty good.
30th in the open.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet you're going, man, I didn't know there's as many guys out there could call that well, huh?
I think the first time I ran into Billy in a contest was it in Hannibal? I seen you the first time. I think the chapter up there in Hannibal had a contest. Or where did I run into you at?
I'm really sure.
See, here we go again with that age thing.
Yeah, we're all having a little problem with dementia.
Yeah, there you go.
But so you got started and then got into the calling circuit and everything. How long did it take you to really start winning and getting up there in the top three slots?
Well, I started in 97. I started going pretty regularly.
Yeah.
I mean, every contest I could find, Chris Curry helped me out a lot. I had a lot of different guys help me, but Chris really helped me out a lot. building me some calls and teaching me the state breeding bacon. I killed a lot of turkeys before I ever went to my first calling contest. And when you step up on that stage, I think the only thing I really had good was a bird, a cluck, and a yelp. I killed a bunch of turkeys. But then I found out you had to be really good on fly down, cutting, tiki run, all that different calls. So I had my work cut out for me. It wasn't easy. I think I, on the Grand National, probably the first time I actually started placing there, probably 2004, 2003. Well, I won the U.S. Open in 04.
Wow. Well, well, yeah, but you hadn't been in it all that long, you know, to go from a guy out there in the woods to a guy standing on the stage at the National Wild Turkey Federation convention. You do that in less than a decade, you've accomplished something. I don't think anybody's just walked out of the woods and hopped in the calling circuit and had an immediate success. I don't know of anybody like that.
I will tell you straight up. I can tell you straight up when he started getting in the groove, he was hard to beat.
Yeah. Who's absolutely. That one you're talking about?
He won the Grand National. He was 16 years old. He came down here. He won the intermediates or juniors. I don't remember what they called them back then.
Greg.
And then he won the Grand National. The Open.
Wow. Bessinger?
I think that's his name. He's
wow.
He did it one time. He said, I'll call this one time. He did it. He won all of them. Well, I don't know. I ain't never seen him.
He hasn't been back. Nope.
Well, where did he go from there?
Well, yeah, more or less.
Yeah, that's kind of like a kid that kills 200-inch buck, you know.
Yeah,
where do you go from there? And I've seen that happen. I was at a little contest over in Rolla, Missouri, two or three years ago. I covered it, and this kid came all the way from northern Missouri. He was like 10 years old, had a 201-inch buck, you know.
Wow.
I mean, how many times is he going to do that in his lifetime? That may be the only one ever, you know. But oh, yeah. A whole lot bigger. I hate to even tell the story on it, but, you know, I didn't have any deer hunting down the Boot Hill, and I come to the hills, and I wasn't really into deer hunting. Old guy at church, it just insisted I go, and he brought me an old 03 A3. It's quarterized, open sights. Billy, I didn't even shoot the gun, and I didn't even go hunting until the last Sunday afternoon. I just want to tell the old man I'd gone deer hunting. And you're going to think I'm lying to you, but I'm standing on a hillside. It was freezing cold. I didn't have the clothes or nothing part. So I found a sunny spot. I didn't care if I saw a deer or not. I just wanted to get warmed up. Standing in the sunshine, soybean field below me. It hadn't been cut yet. Little creek line run down through there. And I saw this deer back. Oh, that's cool. I've seen a deer. I really ought to go home. But I watched it probably for 10 minutes. It popped over the lip of that creek. I thought I was looking at a small elk, you know. And, of course, I got all nervous, and I shot, and I missed. Next year, a buddy of mine killed that buck and scored 182.
Wow.
That's the first deer I ever shot at, and I haven't seen one that big since. I said, you know how many nightmares I've had about that and how many times I've kicked myself just because I didn't prepare?
Yeah.
But I just wasn't that interested. But after I saw that buck, I got interested.
Absolutely.
But that's the way we kind of go at things sometimes. But you guys have been right in the thick of this industry for several decades now. And Keith, he mentioned right at the beginning of the program that he never dreamed that it would come to what it is today. You know how many times I've heard that statement in the last 2 days? You talk to people.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been coming for a while. I never dreamed it'd come to something like this.
No.
And we can't stir them with a stick here. But isn't that great, though, that we've got that many people interested in the wild turkey? And you know yourselves, if you're managing for wild turkeys, you're managing for other critters as well. You're going to do them well.
Right.
Hey, how about the food plot situation in the last two or three decades?
Yeah.
Everybody's got 5 acres that got a food plot.
All these new combines don't drop off the
grain
like
that. Boy, they don't, do they? You are exactly right.
That's right.
Yeah. And, Billy, I downsized about 3 years ago, moved out of the big house and sold my property. Moved into the edge of Cuba, Missouri, first time I've ever lived in the city limits, you know, just by half a block. But right around the corner is out in the county. I can sit on my front porch and watch deer out in the county right across the corner, you know. I keep asking the city boys, I said, I won't get in trouble with them for shooting deer off my front porch. He said, well, you're in the city limits. I said, but the deer are not. I haven't got that worked out yet.
Yeah.
But what fun. But what about today, guys? Is a calling are the calling competitions tougher than they were back in your day when you guys were in the heyday of it?
They absolutely are. Yeah.
How did guys get better?
Well, you got to realize one thing is the teaching methods, the materials, the DVDs, YouTube, all that combined has moved up the ladder and getting better and better, better and better. And man, you can learn so much so quick now.
Yeah, exactly. Know? Hey, I worry about that working on our nervous system at some point, you know, the pressure to learn so quickly. Of course, I'm old enough, I don't worry about it. But I think I told the other day, Billy, you got to hear this story. It's one of my favorites of all time. When I started turkey hunting, too, man, there wasn't all this information out there. I just heard a couple, a few local guys talking about it, and I was living up in the hills, going, well, I got to give it a try. So on a Saturday morning, I went to Western Auto, bought me an old Lynch one-sided box call, I go out in the woods on Monday morning, reach down in my coat pocket, and there was no Army OD green jacket, pulled out my Lynch box call. Well, it's still in a container. I hadn't even unwrapped it. So I got my flashlight, my instructions, and it says, go, yep, yep, yep. So I tried that. It sounded pretty awful. But a turkey gobble. First time I ever scratched on a box call, this turkey gobbled like a mile away. I read the instructions some more. It says, set that box call down and wait 30 minutes. Now, I literally set my box call down on the ground. I followed the instructions, man. I was a stickler for for following the rules, And I'm watching my watch. That's the longest 30 minutes of my life. I picked that call up. I go, yep, 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 turkey gobbles. We did that for 5 days. I stood there by that tree. Yep, yep, yep. Turkey gobble. He didn't move, and I didn't either.
Well, you didn't know. You got to learn some way.
I thought, man, how do you do this? How in the world? Yeah. I never even thought about walking close to a turkey.
Well, I think when I first started hunting, the old guy called me out, and he told me to call. He said, call. Sure,
yeah,
stop and wait 15 minutes. I'm like, all right. We go out, we play with turkeys on some no hunt zones.
Yeah.
Every time we went out there, that old boy never waited no 15 minutes ever. You might have waited five, and that was pretty long.
Oh, yeah.
Now I get a few that I call way too much and too loud, but I tell you what, I started doing what he was doing, and I started killing turkeys.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Well, I finally got my hands on cassettes. Tapes and stuff, listening to that stuff. I'm going out in the woods, and while I'm listening to an old concept tape, and while my experience is in the woods, didn't match up very well, So I started figuring out things on my own, and I discovered pretty quick, like, every day is so different,
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, some days I'd go out there, and man, the turkey's gobbling all the way around me, go back the next day.
Nothing. Yeah.
How does that happen?
And you wonder why.
Yeah. Well, my thought was, them jokers all packed up together, moved three counties over.
They're gone.
That's what I thought. But then, as my education got a little better about turkeys, I read an article by somebody one time. I don't know if he's telling the truth, but he said, even on the best days, you think you got a lot of turkeys gobbling, probably only one in five gobbles. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but probably some, But I also discovered, Billy, I got a little enamored by you guys when the calling contest really started, new Walter Parrott, new Ray. And I was at the state championship the first year that Mark Drury won the state championship. And I thought he was the goofiest guy I'd ever run into in my life, He's strutting around on, I said, what does it got to do with turkey calling? Guy's up there making a fool of himself, he'd probably punch me in the face now if I said that. Oh, I laughed so hard. And of course, I arrived for Drury's deer cast. And I had photos from that first state championship.
Yep.
And it faded out and everything. But I texted it to them just so they could see it. And they actually published the thing. But man, there were some faces there, some young faces that are not quite so young anymore.
Yeah.
But what fun to look back in the history and see the things that they've done, of course.
Bergen, you brought up Mark Drury. I remember when I first met him, it was probably down there at Ozark Mountain Gobblers, down south there, and he was about 14. and he was going to the contest, and I remember seeing him call, and I knew, just give that guy a chance when he gets a little more experience, he's going to be a reckoning.
Well, you call it right.
You doggone right, you know. And he took off from there, and he had that determination in him.
Oh, really did. And those guys, I guess, are kind of engineer types. I can remember when they come out with a dog whistle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, probably train carloads of those things. And I'm so, a dog whistle? Really? Because, you know, I mean, we couldn't even hear it. I said, how do we know anything's even coming out of that? You know, but people kill turkeys with them. And, of course, I bought one. I even bought those. Remember the Raging Rooster?
The Raging Rooster.
Yeah. And the Screaming Peacock. You didn't buy those calls?
I didn't buy them.
I did, man. I had more fun with those things. And I'd buy them just to aggravate my buddies. You know, I'd pull them calls out. You got to be kidding me. You're not really going to use that, are you? I said, nah, just leave them in the truck. Get out and slam the truck door and turkey gobble. You know? But, oh, there's so many stories like that. But, guys, we're going to take just a short break here, but don't run off on us, man. We're having fun here at the National Wild Turkey Federation Convention. And I've got Billy Yargis and Keith Wallach with me, and these guys are full of stories. I could write a book off of what these guys have to say. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browls the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Stoltz with Woodhaven Custom Calls, Mossy Oak Camouflage, and Drury Outdoors. My turkey tip for the week this week is don't be scared to use a decoy. There's a lot of myths about decoys, but I can tell you this. The Avian X Trophy Tom decoy is one decoy I will not hunt without. Doesn't mean I carry it all the time. There is the time and place for a decoy. But if you need a decoy, use one. For instance, open areas, fields, places that you're set up where you know the turkey is going to see you from a distance, man, those decoys really work. Those Avian X is what my personal favorite decoy is. And I use an Avian X HDR Jake, a lookout hen, and a feeder hen. I like to use three decoys if I can. It just makes it look more natural. Turkeys like to go to the flock. They like, they're social birds. So when they see multiple birds rather than just one, they're far more inclined to come to your location. And be smart about how you set your decoys. Don't set your decoys straight out in front of you. And don't set them where the turkeys will see you in between, basically putting you between the decoy's vision and the turkeys. Set them out to one side or the other. So you want to put them, if the turkey's coming from your left, you want to put the decoys a little bit to your right, about 10, 15 yards. And that's the other thing. Don't put the decoys too far from your location. You want the turkeys to come in close for a shot. You hear a lot about reaping with a decoy. Well, let me tell you, it works. And I don't leave home without my Trophy Tom. And I use a real turkey fan that I spread out, salt down, and let it dry out, and I put it in that Trophy Tom. And I can tell you this, every single gobbler that I took last spring was directly a result of using the Trophy Tom and using that visual to bring that gobbler in for the shot. I'm Steve Stoltz, and that's my turkey hunting tip for the week.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I hope you enjoyed that first segment with Keith Walling and Billy Yargis. Boy, if I was going to put together a turkey hunting team that I want to tag along with, these guys would be right at the top of the list. There's been a few turkeys died at the end of their shotguns over the decades. And they're kind of, I love talking to these guys because they're very similar, but they're very different. Keith started out hunting in the Ozarks, Callaway County, I think he said. Billy Yargis is northeast Missouri. I think turkeys up there are probably longer legged because they have to wade the Mississippi River.
There's a possibility of that.
All the geese turkeys, one leg was longer than the other. You know, walk around those hillsides.
That's exactly right. They lean in, kind of lean in.
Yeah. But the thing is, here you are from two different parts of the state, but you share a passion. And, of course, you guys are right there in that golden age of turkey hunting when the population really started exploding. Remember the 80s, the
80s.
90s? Yeah. It seemed like there was a turkey behind every tree out there. But, Billy, pick your brain a little bit. What type of terrain did you start hunting in the beginning?
I always wanted to be in the timber. I guess that's really the first thing we're at, and that's where I wanted to be at. So I killed my first turtle up on Mark Twain Lake, and we could stand in one spot, and I hear 30 or 40 gobblers. And a lot of them was a long way off. There was always probably 8 or 10 right there, right where I was at.
Well, I got to ask you, being on Mark Twain, were you good enough to kill the turkey, you know, in the first hour of the morning, then you got to go hunt around rush moons and copy fish in the afternoon?
We didn't. The lake wasn't a lake yet. We didn't get in the building with the water in it.
See, there's that age thing again.
Yeah, exactly. I thought Mark Twain Lake had been around for 150 years.
I got 85 the first year they filled it up.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that young of a lake.
Yeah, 81 when I killed my first bird.
So. I'll be dumb. Well, that's a while, but still hunting in the woods. And, Keith, I guess you started hunting in the woods as well.
Absolutely. Callaway County, Rolling Hills, you know. And I always like, I'm like Billy in a way, I like the wooded areas. You know, I'm not a big field guy. And I always like kind of look for a saddle. Was one of my favorite areas, terrain to go look for. In ridge points, you know, a lot of times there'll be a bird around there someplace. The high point.
Exactly. And I agree with you so much. Of course, I started hunting in the big woods too. And again, you know, I sucked the sucker for information and just believed everything I read. Remember the days back when you couldn't even have wild turkeys, that you had 5,000 continuous acres of hardwoods.
Right.
Well, we discovered that's not altogether true.
Right.
So I wouldn't even consider hunting around the field and stuff. I look for the biggest block of woods I could find. And, you know, sometimes those turkeys are pretty few and far between.
Well, that guarantee of Callaway County was when I first started.
Yeah.
I mean, if I heard one gobbler, buddy, I was jumping up and down for joy and taking off running.
Yeah. Hey, that's dumber than a box of rocks when I first started turkey hunting, and I just had this big turkey syndrome. You know, I wasn't shooting a turkey unless he had a big beard on him. And I didn't kill one for 5 years. I passed up jakes for 5 years, and finally, when I pulled the trigger on one, it was a big gobbler and a big jake. He had like a 5 or 6 inch beard. They went behind a big tree, and as the first one steps out to get it, well, it was a big jake, you know. But I was tickled pink to get him. But I can remember being in the National Forest one time hunting for days, man. Wasn't hearing nothing gobble. And I was using something Keith had taught me, using that lost call, that fall call in the spring to get jakes and two-year-olds to come to it. And, man, I'm on, like, my fourth day, and I haven't heard a gobble, and I'm giving those lost calls. And I can see way through the woods. I finally saw, now, this was in my first 5 years, I saw a turkey coming. It came, it came, it came. See, it was a Jake, so I already determined I wasn't going to shoot that bird, you know. It walked up within 12 yards of me and stood right there. Like, well, this is pretty cool. And kind of a lightning bolt hit me in the brain. I decided I'd shoot that bird. I was going to snap shoot him, you know.
Surprise!
It didn't work out too well.
I shot that first game. Yeah, that's that. Me too, buddy. And it could have been a 25-pound gobbler, buddy. Anyway, I was just as proud as a peacock.
Exactly. And I finally killed that first Jake. I was pretty proud of myself. I kind of got over that big turkey syndrome, you know.
Yep.
I mean, I still like the long beards, the big spurs, and all that stuff. But I'll still shoot a Jake once in a while. In fact, I killed. Got to kill one 3 years ago, and I'm getting a little old, be doing that belly crawl stuff, you know, particularly on one of these old rocky ridges. But these turkeys wasn't coming. There was three or four gobblers about hung up about 80 yards, but I had some brush piles between me. The man, I started low crawling. I got up there close within 30 yards of those birds, whine real soft. What broke out of the bunch? A Jake. Come. He's coming to me. I'm going to kill that rascal. So I just come up right quick, going to shoot him. Hung my sling up on a friggin' limb, and I'm wrestling with that. Of course, I had to shoot even quicker. Missed that one, too. Oh, man. I tell you, but, you know, and I had a lot of turkey hunting experience on my belt. You think I've got it all figured out. There ain't nothing new that can happen. Wrong.
They're all different. They're all different, too. It seems like different techniques to try, you know, calling, even calling. I mean, he likes this type of calling, and this bird likes that type of calling, a box call compared to a slate or a mouth call. You feel him out.
Yeah.
See what he likes to hear.
Yeah.
And work on it, you know.
Well, I'm telling you what, we've seen so many things happen in the outdoors in our decades we've been on this earth. I keep wondering when somebody's come, you know, they got live scope now and fishing. When's somebody going to come up with something like that for turkey hunting?
give it a little time.
Scan the woods, man.
On that drones, yeah. You know.
I just couldn't believe it. The first time I fished with live scope about 8 years ago, a guy was showing me that. You know, it was like a big TV screen sitting there. You can see this massive ball of crappie. He said, drop your jig down. I said, there's something moving on the screen. He said, that's your jig. Move it right down. You see one fish come up out of a massive ball and take that thing out of what has fishing come to? Honestly, I hope that never happens to turkey hunting. It certainly would, man. But, you know, you never know what's coming up next. Well, guys, I'd like to take a few minutes here. And I know you've talked to thousands and thousands of turkey hunters over the years. But I know, you know, we all talk about education. And still one of the most exciting things that can happen to you is have a youngster walk up to you and ask you how to turkey hunt. Now, that's a very broad question. But for those young folks that are wanting to get out there and get started, as far as calling is concerned, what kind of tips would you give them? And don't both speak at once.
Go ahead, Billy.
Well, the best thing I can tell you, if you want to start working, probably get a slate call. You can get quicker at that as far as learning how to do a turkey. You can do all the turkey.
Right.
Then you could do the mouth call. And I'd also say buy a mouth call and get started with that. I strictly went to a mouth call. Because when I was a kid, everybody told me, oh, you need to do a mouth call, your hands free and everything else. Well, I thought that was the only thing to use. And I did kill my first turkey with a mouth call. I killed lots of them, but slate call would probably get them a bird killed a lot faster.
I think you're probably right. But when they get out there in the woods and they're just getting started out, what kind of calls should they use? I mean, just a yelp or?
I tell you, the plain yelp is the bread and butter, in my opinion. Whether you go on public property or whether you go on private, plain yelp. I told you, Mark Twain Lake.
Yeah.
Small two miles of that bird, they went up, they be going the other direction a lot of times because they get more pressure.
Right. Exactly.
The plain yelp or the real. You know, the real soft plain yelp, pretty
yelp. Yeah, that's another thing I've discovered in the early years of my turkey hunting career was I hunted some public property, and yeah, I had a tough time with turkeys, but boy, I had some sweet spots, three or four farms that I could hunt that nobody else come in on. I discovered quickly turkeys were a lot dumber there.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah, and back when the turkeys were so thick, man, I was knocking them down. I got thinking I was just a pretty good turkey hunter, you know, but the numbers kind of thinned out. I don't know what happened. I lost my edge.
Yeah.
I like them that way. I like the dumb ones.
Oh, I do too. And I've killed lots of two-year-old birds. And I chuckle when he mentioned a 25-pound bird log. I go, what is that? You know, I've killed 107 turkeys, and I never killed one over 23 pounds. Yeah. I had a chance up in North Missouri one time, but I got greedy. I had two coming. My wife and I was hunting. One of them close enough to hunt. I said, just hang on. I'll suck that other one in. Well, I didn't. It left. My turkey left with it. Yeah. You know, but I've seen these guys killing these 25, 26, 27. I've even heard of 30-pound turkeys in North Missouri, you know. I just give up. I'm happy with a 23-pound turkey.
Well, you know, going back to that is the old hook spur on them, too. They can weigh 15 pounds with an inch and a half spur, and I'll take that bird.
Oh, yeah. You know?
That's just the way it is, you know.
Well, I've hunted quite a bit in the Yucatan of Mexico, and, of course, those oscillated birds, I mean, a monster is 13 pounds, but they'll have right kill one with one of, like, two-and-a-half-inch spurs.
Wow.
And it's not uncommon at all to get two-inch spurs. Needle sharp. The last time I was in the jungle a couple of years ago, had a pretty hefty Mexican guide with me, and it was the weirdest thing. Man, we hiked in the jungle a couple of miles, and you know those big old bottles of water, 5-gallon things? He had one on his shoulder. I thought, man, he's planning on staying out there for days. I guess we're going to drink a lot of water. I had no idea what he was up to. We get in, and they build brush blinds so thick, a gnat couldn't get in there, you know, leave you a whole bunch size of softball to shoot out of you. But I don't like it at all. And I finally convinced the guy we was hunting along a Milo field. I said, I couldn't see squat. And I said, man, can I just go out there and set the edge of that field? He looked at me like us from outer space. You know, I said, we kill turkeys like that all the time. He didn't want me to do it, but I went out and had one weed in front of me and sitting. I had a support seat, you know, so sat down. I'm pretty comfortable. Well, in 15 minutes, he had three birds coming up the side of that field. They hit 40 yards. He's whispering, Senor Bill, shoot. I didn't shoot. I was going to prove to him. I could let that turkey get close, you know. It kept coming. Senor Bill, shoot. I let that turkey, little turkey, come to 12 yards, man. I shot him. It looked like he shot a feather pillow, you know. He come out there. He said, he's holding his head. Never see anything like that. Never see anything like that. But, boy, you cannot convince them to let you get out there, you know. Yeah, and sit down and be still and call them turkeys in close.
I don't know from experience, when you're a guide, sometimes you got some people you have to keep covered.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. But this guy that was carrying the water jug, we're in the jungle, and it's limestone country just like around here. And out in front of us, about 30 yards, was some outcropping, just come put us so up out of soil, but they had a lot of indentation to them. He goes out there and pours that water in those rock crevices. Water is a limiting factor in the Yucatan, and he'd been doing that for some time, so those turkeys knew that water source was there. In about 30 minutes, here come a flock of about 30 turkeys, and I swear my eyesight's not the greatest in the world, but I think I had periscopes on that day, because I could see these inch and a half, 2-inch spurs all through that flock of birds. I was getting excited. I kept picking one out. I said, can I shoot that one? Pedro, can I shoot that one? No, senor. No. Well, they laughed. The whole flock laughed. I'm going, man. And I figured out later he was afraid I was going to kill more than one turkey.
Uh-huh.
But he just whistled real soft with his mouth. Those turkeys come right back. And again, I had umpteen opportunities to shoot, and he's not letting me shoot. Finally, a big gobbler hopped up on a tree. He didn't waste any time. Then shoot it. You know, so roll him off of that log. But, man, turkey hunting. Here I'm 76 years old, and I still get as excited today when I hear a turkey gobble as I did when I started 50 years ago. But, guys, want to wrap this up, but I always put you guys on the spot, you know. Best turkey hunting tip of all time that you've heard.
Okay, the big P word, patience. If I was going to tell anybody that who wants to start turkey hunting, you got to have patience. And it's like Billy said, you go with the basic, stay with that basic calling of soft yelps and clucks of purrs and spread it out. Don't get real loud and stick with the basics. And I'm going to tell you, some of your biggest gobblers, I mean, hook spur gobblers, will come into that, some of that, a little basic calling. And have patience, and you know, will be successful some, you know, in time.
Absolutely. Billy, anything to add to that?
Oh, yeah. Do some scouting. Do a lot of scouting. Then you do some praying.
Yeah.
God bless you. Yeah. That's the way, main way you're going to kill some birds.
Absolutely, man. And both of you hit the nail on the head. Now, I was better at scouting early in my career than I was with the patient hill, I can tell you that. So you know how it is out in our work world, a whole society.
Right.
We're cranked up, man, you know, and our society wants that instant gratification, you know, and we see it. Oh, one of the worst things you can do, I think, is watch turkey hunting shows.
Yeah.
It seems,
well, some
in
of the running,
minutes, they're going to kill a big gobbler.
Some of that running and gunning stuff,
yeah.
You know, you don't know what kind of turkeys you're passing up running to that one that's far away, you know.
Yes,
like
I do.
You said earlier,
yeah, I bumped a lot of them.
It's like you said earlier, you know, there might be that one gobbler in that group of three or four that's gobbling,
yeah,
you know, because he's dominant,
yeah,
and exactly right. You don't know that. And there's some gobblers just don't go gobble at all, but they come in silent.
Well, I gotta tell you, I worked on my patients one year. I'd camped out the night before turkey season. That had to been probably early to mid-80s. Man, it got colder, and I woke up, there's 3 inches of snow on the ground. My little tent's covered. But I'm going turkey hunting anyway. Now, way out in the woods, the wind was blowing. It was freezing cold, and I couldn't get out of that wind. I saw a big stump hole, so I jumped down in this big hole. I stayed there all morning long. I never heard a single turkey gobble, but the woods were beautiful with the snow on. I call it Keith's lost call. Every little bit, you know, and turkey season ended at noon that year. And I was patient all morning long, but I still made a huge mistake. Before I looked at my watch, it's like 4 minutes to 12, unloaded my shotgun down in that hole. I stood up, and what did I hear behind me?
Putt, putt, putt.
Exactly. I wheeled around those birds for 20 yards, a pair of them. Had I not unloaded my shotgun, had I checked around me before I stood up, I'd have killed the gobbler. Man, you're talking about kicking trees on the way out.
Oh, I bet.
Oh,
that's what we're going to do, let me get up on my knees and check it. Up there on the lake one year, I think it was in 1989, I had a bird. I worked in for over an hour and a half, and I heard another bird on my right. And I'm getting ready to go to him, but this wasn't moving. I got up on my knees, and I'm looking, and all of a sudden, there he is. And I see, I guess he heard that other gobble, and he started coming towards me. I looked, I got back down. If I'd have got up,
Isn't it amazing the things you can happen? I went through a period of years in my turkey hunting career. I hunted turkey standing up. I back up against a big tree, have a bush just about chest high in front of me. I could see so much further through the woods. And, hey, you let them go behind a bush or a tree. You're holding that gun all morning at port arms. And all you got to do is ease it up slowly, and that bird stepped up, bang. I killed a lot of turkeys like that. I don't want to stand up anymore. I like taking naps, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And, man.
My turkey hunting taxes have changed so much. You know, when I first started, you hear that turkey gobble a mile away, I double time over there, man. Now I might, maybe, walk halfway, sit down, and
there
call.
There you go.
If he wants to come, that's fine. If he don't, that's fine.
That's that patience thing coming into picture again.
I got
again.
A lot more patience than I used to have. I tell everybody I'm just smarter, you know.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, guys, it's been wonderful having the pair of you on the show, and I hope you won't be strangers full of turkey hunting information. I can tell by the smiles on your faces you still love it and going to keep promoting it. And, hey, how do people find out about Woodhaven Calls?
All you have to do is come down here to the booth. We'll take care of you. Get on woodhaven.com.
And you can find them.
Facebook, all over
them. All righty. Well, thank you so much. And folks from Keith Walling and Billy Yargis and myself, Bill Cooper, we're living our outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and live your dreams as well.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you. You could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business, Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.